Today I'll discuss the remaining of the Mangalacharan verses from Prabhupada's and then I will discuss points made by Prabhupada in this book. This is a book called Gitar Gan, and this was composed by Prabhupada when he was a Vanaprastha in Vrindavan in the late 1950s. And what he had done was he presented a paraphrase in poetry format in Bengali of the entire Bhagavad Gita. And he composed an introduction to that also. So I'll speak on some of the points he raises in the introduction. And then I will speak on some of the points that are raised in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's introduction to the Bhagavad Gita. In this Bhagavad Gita class, I am going to consult, in addition to Prabhupada's commentary, I will consult Gitar Gan. I will consult Bhaktivinoda Thakur's two commentaries, Vishwanath Chakravarti's commentary, Baladeva Vidya Bhushan, Madhvacharya's two commentaries, Ramanuja's commentary, Sridhar Swami's commentary, and Keshava Kashmiri's commentary. I'm not going to speak on everything from everyone, but I will gather excerpts from them, everything which I find relevant. Okay. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho, Dinabandho Jagatpate, Gopesha Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta Namostute. Oh my dear Krishna, you are the friend of the distressed and the source of creation. You are the master of the gopis and the lover of Radharani. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Krishna is an ocean of mercy. He is a friend of the distressed. He is the lord of the universe or the source of the universe. He is the master of the gopis. He is the lord of the gopas also. And he is the lover of Radha. You can consider this to be like a lakshana of Krishna. This is what we mean by Krishna. Saptakanchana Gaurangi, Radhe, Vrindavaneshwari, Vrishabhana Sute Devi, Pranamami Hari Priya. I offer my respects to Radharani, whose bodily complexion is like molten gold, and who is the queen of Vrindavan. You are the daughter of King Vrishabhana, and you are very dear to Lord Krishna. Radha is Krishna's internal potency, and therefore her identity is entirely private, exclusive to Krishna. And therefore she is identified as Vrindavaneshwari. Vrajeshwari refers to Yashoda. Vrindavaneshwari refers to Radha. Vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripasandubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto all the Vaishnava devotees of the Lord. They can fulfill the desires of everyone just like desire trees, and they are full of compassion for the fallen souls. Primarily, these kinds of statements about the qualities of a Vaishnava refer to Uttamadhikari Vaishnavas, Vaishnavas of the highest status. Those who have attained love of Krishna. Secondarily, they apply to Madhyamadhikari Vaishnavas, Vaishnavas who are at least fixed on the path of devotional service. And tertially, they apply to Vaishnavas who are neophytes in the process. So when you hear that they can fulfill the desires of everyone, this is with reference to Uttamadhikari Vaishnavas. Madhyamadhikari Vaishnavas, when they are in line with Uttamadhikari Vaishnavas. Kanishkadhikari Vaishnavas, when they are in line with Uttamadhikari Vaishnavas. When they are out of line, immediately they are potency less. Uttamadhikaris are always connected with Krishna. So they don't have dual mode. Whereas Madhyamadhikaris and definitely Kanishkadhikaris, they are in double mode. Sometimes they are with Krishna, sometimes they are with Maya. So these statements should be understood in that light. That's a similar This is based on an explanation given by Baladeva Vidyabhushan in his comment on the 12th chapter of the Gita, text 13. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Ganadhar Shri Vasadi Gauram Bhakta Vrinda. I offer my obeisances to Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Ganadhar Shri Vas and all others in the line of devotion. This is the Panchatattva Mantra. This mantra was given by Raghunath Das Babaji. The idea of worshipping Panchatattva prior to worship of Radha Krishna stated by Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So it is from there that we gather this concept of worshipping the Lord in five features. Shri Krishna Chaitanya is Krishna himself with the complexion and mood of Radharani. Prabhu Nityananda refers to Nityananda Prabhu, incarnation of Lord Balaram, came to assist Krishna in his pastime of distributing love of God. Shri Advaita refers to Advaita Acharya, incarnation of Mahavishnu. Gadadhar is an incarnation of Radha. Srivas is an incarnation of Narad Muni representing the pure Jiva. Srivas Adi Gaurav Bhakta Vrinda, all others in the line of devotion. That refers to the Sampradaya Acharyas. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This is a prayer to Hara. Hare, in this context, refers to Hara. Hara is Radha. She who attracts Krishna, that's Radha. Rama is also a name of Krishna. Rama means one who gives pleasure. Anante yogino anante satyanande chidatmani iti rama padenaso param brahma vidhiyate. One who is filled with bliss and one who distributes bliss. It's a name of Krishna. Krishna itself means one who is all attractive, sarvakarshaka. So the Hare Krishna, Hare Rama mantra is a prayer to Radha Krishna. And as Prabhupada explained it means, please engage me in your devotional service. This is the meaning of the Hare Krishna mantra. Please engage me in your devotional service. Okay. Any questions or comments on this? Otherwise, I'm moving into Gita Arkana introduction. Okay. So there are several points that Prabhupada makes here in Gita Gaon. Introduction, Bhashya Bhumika. I am not going to bring out all the points, but certain important features I will bring out and I will present an outline of his points here, which is very important. The first point that Prabhupada makes is the Supreme Lord and his nature and his features cannot be understood by anyone unless the Lord desires. That's the very first point he makes. He says that Krishna has unlimited potencies, opulences, sweetness, power, heroism, beauty, knowledge, renunciation, etc. And unintelligent people cannot understand. And what to speak of human beings, even demigods cannot understand Krishna. Even the rishis cannot understand Krishna. And even the best of the Lord's incarnations, Anantashesh, even he is unable to sufficiently describe Krishna's nature. There's a statement in the third canto of the Bhagavata that even the Supreme Lord himself, even he is unable to fathom the limit of the nature and glory of the Supreme Lord. So even Anantashesh is unable to exactly delineate Krishna's position, the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So under that circumstance, there is no way you can understand what Krishna is speaking unless you are empowered by somebody, unless that Krishna empowers a devotee with the potency to be able to understand him. And he says that unless we surrender to Vaishnava Acharyas of that nature, there is no hope we can even begin to understand Bhagavad Gita. And also Bhagavad Gita specifies in chapter 13 that where Krishna gives an outline of education. What is education? How do you become educated? It lists out 20 points. And there he says one must worship the spiritual master, Acharya Upasana. So Prabhupada draws the attention to that. And another statement in the Upanishads, Acharyavan Purusho Veda, that only a person who clings on to the lotus feet of an Acharya, only that person is capable of understanding the absolute truth. So Prabhupada draws reference to that, and he says that there is no possibility of understanding the meaning of Bhagavad Gita otherwise. And then he says that I have presented this book, Gita Argan, but this is based on the teachings of the previous Acharyas. And then he says, amongst the Acharyas are Sripad Shankaracharya, Sripad Ramanujacharya, Sripad Madhvacharya, Sripad Vishnu Swami, Sripad Nimbarkar. These are very, very worshipable and much remembered Acharyas in India, and they are very famous, and they are accepted as Acharyas who understand about spirituality. And then he says that amongst them we can divide. He says that you can more or less divide the Acharyas into two groups.
Because on one side you have Nirvisheshama, represented by Shankara. Then there are Savisheshama. Represented by Ramananda, Madhva, Vishnu Swami, Nimbarka, and of course, Rupa Goswami.
Now, Nirvisheshavadi refers to impersonalists, those who are interested in the impersonal feature of the Absolute Truth. Savisheshavadi refers to those who are devotees of the Bhagavan feature of the Supreme Lord. And he says that these four are known as, these Acharyas are known as Vaishnava Acharyas, and they are known as Mayavadi Acharyas. So more or less, you can divide them into the Vaishnava Bhagavata Sampradaya and the other group as the Nirvisheshavadi or the Mayavadi Sampradaya. And then Prabhupada, he explains that there are certain common features between them. Both of them are aiming at liberation. The people of both major categories, they are all people who are traveling the path of liberation. And both of them want to get out of this temporary world, which is simply an abode of misery and ignorance, and they want to attain the absolute truth. Some of them are interested in the impersonal aspect, some are interested in the personal aspect, but both are trying to get out. This world is a prison house of sex life, and they, both groups emphasize that we need to get out of this world. And they strongly put their effort into getting out of this world. And both of them respect Bhagavad Gita as the boat on which you use to cross over the ocean of material existence, and they worship the statements of Bhagavad Gita. So both of them, they accept it, and they accept that you have to accept the authority of Sri Krishna. The difference is that those who are Vaishnava Acharyas, they are interested in obtaining love for the Supreme Lord, whereas these impersonalists, they want to be merged into the Brahman feature, the impersonal effulgence of the Supreme Lord. And we learn from Bhagavad Gita chapter 12 that even though both pathways are available, the impersonalist pathway is filled with difficulties. It's filled with difficulties, it's slow, whereas the pathway of personalism is fast, it is much more comprehensive, and Krishna himself helps. And then he says that ultimately speaking, the absolute truth is not impersonal. The absolute truth has an impersonal feature, but the absolute truth is not impersonal. The absolute truth is Bhagavan. But Bhagavan, he emanates the rays of the impersonal Brahman. So in reality, there is Bhagavan, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he also points out that Shankaracharya has admitted these points. Shankaracharya actually admits the transcendental position of Krishna. It is not that that Shankaracharya denies that. He has indirectly accepted it. He has not directly stated it, even though he is promoting impersonalism. He has indirectly accepted that. One must accept that the Supreme Lord existed beyond the universe, and he caused the universe without being affected by the universe. One must accept that part. And the Lord was existing before creation, he exists during creation, he exists after creation. These points are very well brought out by the Vaishnava Acharyas, and Shankaracharya has also accepted it, indirectly has accepted it. And then he asked the question that look, if they are also accepting that, if Shankaracharya has accepted that the Supreme Personality of Godhead actually exists beyond the material world, and our Acharyas are also saying that, then what is the real difference between these two groups, major categories? And then he says that Shankaracharya, he preached a certain ideology which was required for that time. Shankaracharya appeared to drive away Buddhism. So he preached a certain philosophy which was very similar to Buddhism. And therefore, Shankaracharya emphasized, under the instruction of the Supreme Lord, that the impersonal aspect is true, whereas everything else is false. But Prabhupada says this is simply his spiritual diplomacy. Because the very same Shankara has also said that there exists a Supreme Lord beyond matter. Standard Mayavad of today will tell you that the Bhagavan feature is actually inside, it is inside matter in the mode of goodness. Vishnu is in the mode of goodness. That's their concept. But transcendental is the impersonal problem, which is really real. Paramartha Satya. Whereas this is not really real. Vishnu is not really real. Bhagavan is not really real. But Shankaracharya has made statement that the Supreme Lord is also beyond material creation, which is another way of saying he is really real. And actually what Prabhupada does is, he quotes from Shankaracharya's Bhagavad Gita commentary. This is how Shankara's Bhagavad Gita commentary begins. Om Narayana Paro Vyakta Andam Avyakta Sambhavam Andasyantas Tvime Loka Saptadvipacha Medini. That the Supreme Lord Narayana is beyond the Avyakta. You see, there are two portions of material creation. One portion of material creation is manifested. That means the world that we see. And then that is called Vyakta, the manifested portion. Then there is something which is unmanifested. Prabhupada gave the example, it is something like a storeroom where all the ingredients for creation are stored, from which this manifested portion is configured. Just like we have a computer, the screen is what you see. But there are plenty of things which are on the background. You have chips and you have wires and they are not a part of the display. They are the ones which cause the display. So there is the vyakta portion of the material world, there is the avyakta portion. But Shankaracharya says that Narayana is beyond the avyakta, the unmanifested portion. Which is another way of saying that he is transcendental to material creation completely. Narayana paravyakta, andam avyakta sambhavam, and the Brahmanda, the material universe, that is born out of the avyakta portion. Andasyamtas prime loka. And inside this Brahmanda, this universe, are the 14 planetary systems. Saptadvipacha medini, and there is Bhumandala, the 7 islands. Then Shankaracharya ji says that so Bhagavan srishtva idam jagat tasya sthitam chikirshuhu marichyadin agre srishtva prajapatin pravritta lakshanam dharmam grahayamasa vedoktam. It has been stated in the Vedas that Bhagavan, that Supreme Lord Narayan, having created this illusory creation, having created this world, in order to maintain or protect this, he, at the beginning, he created Marichi and others, who were the Prajapatis. And he taught them Pravritti Dharma. And he made them accept this, which is accepted in the Vedas. You should know what is meant by Pravritti Dharma.
These are important concepts that you should understand.
Pravritti dharma and nivritti dharma are very commonly used in various Vedic literature. Pravritti dharma refers to the pathway of enjoyment under the instruction and sanction of the Vedas. Nivritti dharma refers to the pathway of liberation, getting out, it's the exit. So the Vedas teach both how to experience happiness in this world, bhoga, bhukti, it is also called pravritti. But it also teaches how to get out, nivritti. So, Shankaracharya says that the Supreme Lord, created Marichi and other Prajapatis. Prajapatis are progenitors, they are universal progenitors. And they increase the population. Details of this you will find in the 3rd and 4th cantos of the Bhagavatam, about the Prajapatis and so on, in the earlier cantos of the Bhagavatam. So, it is well known that they are engaged in Pravritti Dharma. So that is one portion of the Vedas. Sometimes Pravritti Dharma is also called Karma Kanda. Nivritti Dharma is also called Jnana Kanda. Sometimes Nivritti Dharma is also called Moksha Dharma. Religious principles which are aimed at liberation. So, and Prabhupada gives an additional information. He says that in the Brahmanda Purana, it is very clearly explained that Vasudev Krishna is the one who manifested Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, and also Durga, Gayatri, and other potencies from his own body. Then Shankaracharya says, Tataha Anyancha Sanaka Sanandana Adinupadya Nivritti Lakshanam Dharmam Jnana Vairagya Lakshanam Grahayam Asa. And after that, he disseminated, he first of all, he created or he manifested Sanaka, Sanandana and the other Kumaras. And then he taught them Nivritti Dharma, the pathway of liberation, and which is characterized by knowledge of the absolute truth and renunciation. And he made them accept this, the four Kumaras. So from this we understand that there are two categories of Vedic instruction. Prabhupada, he draws attention to this point that Shankaracharya here has taught, has explained that the four Kumaras, or the four Kumaras have accepted the pathway of knowledge and renunciation. And he says that there is a reason why he is referring to these four Kumaras. And then he says that the four Kumaras were first of all Nirvisheshavadis. But later on they became Savisheshavadis. Later on they became Savisheshavadis. Now how do we know that they became Savisheshavadis? From the Bhagavatam, from the third canto. There was a time when the four Kumaras went to Vaikuntha. They were stopped by the Lord's own will and arrangement. They were stopped by Jai and Vijay, the gatekeepers. So at that time, by the Lord's will, the four Kumaras, they cursed Jai and Vijay to appear in this world as demons, etc. That was just a sort of a springboard for the Lord to manifest his pastimes. So at that time, the Lord appeared along with Lakshmi in front of the four Kumaras. So when that happened, then Shukadeva Goswami describes what happened to the four Kumaras. Tasyara vinda nayanasya padara vinda kinjalka mishra tulasi makaranda vayu antargatam savirena chakara tesham sankshobam akshara jasham apichitta tanvo. So when the lotus eyed god, when he was there, then the wind which touched the fragrance that emanated from the tulasi, which was situated at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, was smelt by the four Kumaras. So at that time, these Aksharadusham, these personalities were absorbed in the impersonal absolute. Their body and minds were excited, agitated by the Supreme Lord, by the wind, by that wind which touched the fragrance that came from the tulasi that was situated at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. So that attracted them. And from that time onwards, they gave up meditation on the impersonal absolute truth. And they became attracted to the form and personality of the Supreme Lord. And actually from that point, Prabhupada says that they became gurus of the Vaishnavas. In fact, in the Nimbarka Sampradaya, Nimbarka, yesterday was Nimbarka's appearance day. From the Nimbarka's guru is Narada, whose guru was the four Kumaras. So the four Kumaras became Savisheshavadis. So, so from the point that Prabhupada is making is that Shankaracharya is indirectly letting you know that personalism is higher than impersonalism. That's the reason why he is giving the four Kumaras as an example. He would have given somebody else as an example for personalities who became impersonalists. But he is giving the example of the four Kumaras. Because the four Kumaras at a later point, they graduated into personalists. So the Supreme Lord himself, he is the one who appears when Vedic Dharma is being distorted. So the Supreme Lord comes, and in order to protect the living entities, he speaks Bhagavad Gita, and therefore this Dharma Grantha, this textbook on Vedic Dharma, should be studied by everyone. then he says that then he quotes from Ramanujacharya. Param Brahma Purushottama Narayano Prahadi Stavaramstam Achilam Jagat Srishtva Svena Rupena Avasthitaha. He says that the Supreme Lord's nature is that absolute truth, the Supreme Personality of God is Narayana. Even though he creates this universe, beginning with Brahma, all the way to some immobile creature like some stone or some mountain or some pillar, even though he creates all that, he is still situated in his own personality. He does not lose his personality. Prabhupada often gave the example. He said that suppose you take a piece of paper and you tear it up and you throw out all the pieces, then the paper has become distributed throughout your room, but the paper has lost its existence. So there are many statements in the Vedas that the Lord has distributed himself, that absolute truth, Brahman, has distributed itself throughout the universe. But Ramanujacharya points out that even though he creates all this universe and he enters into the universe as a super soul, he has not lost his individuality, he has not lost his personality, he has not lost his existence. Svena rupena avastita, he has not lost it. Now this is called Shakti Parinam. This is called Shakti Parinam. According to the impersonalist theory, when Brahman is distributing itself throughout the universe, it loses its existence, it becomes impersonal. But we don't accept that. We accept the concept that even when something is being manifested from the Lord doesn't become cut out. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives the example of a touchstone. A touchstone can, if you touch it to a metal, the metal becomes gold. So it can go on and can go on producing one after another more and more gold objects. But it doesn't lose its potency. The demigods, they have certain types of touchstones. Sorry, they are called Chintamani. And so Lord Chaitanya says, if even a mundane touchstone, like in the heavenly planets, it can produce innumerable objects, and this is not becoming smaller and smaller, it's still the same. So if that has some inconceivable potency, then why should you, what is there so wonderful about the Supreme Lord, who can distribute himself and still be what he is? And therefore it is stated in the Upanishads, Purnam Adah, Purnam Idam, Purnat Purnam Udachyate, Purnasya Purnam Adaya, Purnameva Avashishyate. But even though he manifests himself through unlimited forms, he enters into the universes and all that, nevertheless he exists by his inconceivable potency, Achintya Shakti. So Svena Rupena Avastita, he is still present in his own form. He does not lose his individuality. This is a very, very important point. Doesn't lose his individuality. And then he says, Ramanujan, Brahmadi Deva Manushyanam Jnana Aradhanat Jagocharopi Apara Karunya Saushilya Vatsalyaudarya Mahodadihi Swameva Rupam Tattat Sajatiya Samsthanam Swasvabhavam Ajahad Deva Kurvan Deshu Teshu Kaleshu Avatirya Taih Taih Aradita Tattva Dishtyana Rupam Dharmartha Kama Mokshakhyam Phalam Prayachan Bhubhara Avatarana Padeshena Asmatadinam Api Samashrayaniyanam Samashrayaniyaya Avatirya Urvya Sakala Manuja Nayana Vishayatam Gataha. The first point that he makes is that the Lord is beyond the range of human beings, demigods, including Lord Brahma. He cannot be seen by them. He cannot be meditated upon by them. He cannot be seen by them. But nevertheless, by his unlimited compassion, his sweetness, his kindness, his affection for the living entities, in his own form, which is comparable to his surrounding in the spiritual world, without giving up his nature, at specific times he descends. And he is worshipped in this world for various reasons, for attaining dharma, artha, kama, moksha, the love of God, prema bhakti. And he gives it to them corresponding to their prayers. And on the pretext of removing the burden of this earth, he comes to this world and he makes himself qualified to be seen by all human beings. This is a very important point. The Lord is actually
Avam Mono
Gosha.
This is a concept
which is several times in the scriptures. The Lord is actually incapable of being described, seen, and even thought about. Strictly speaking, we cannot even think about him because it is beyond our experience. How can you think of something which is beyond your experience? For instance, you can think about, suppose someone says that I saw a very unique bird flying in the sky. Suppose someone says, I saw a very unique bird flying in the sky. Immediately you will say, how does it look like? Because you want to understand it based on something you have seen. Or suppose someone says that, I saw a beautiful indigo flower, and you don't know what indigo is. And you ask, what is indigo? So there are two ways to understand what indigo is. Either someone shows you something in indigo. So immediately they are bringing it to your experience. Because you cannot conceive of something beyond your experience, so it has to be brought inside your experience. Either that, or they tell you it is a color in between this and this. You know violet, you know blue, it is in between those two. So in your mind you are trying to put it together. But again, you have to have seen violet before. You have to have seen blue. Otherwise you have to know that violet, the word violet is referring to that color violet, the word blue refers to that color blue. And only then you will be able to even speculate. But the Supreme Lord is described as Avang Manav Gochara. He is beyond the mind, beyond our experience, beyond our mind. Adhokshaja is ever beyond our attempts to reach him, under all circumstances. No matter what we try to do, we can never get him by our own choice. So under the circumstance, it is impossible for us to actually perceive him. And even Lord Brahma cannot see him. So therefore, when the Lord manifests, we keep referring to this word avatar. What does avatar mean? Avatar means he descends. But what is this descent? He is already descended. As Paramatma is present everywhere, he is already descended. So then why do we say avatar? Because avatar means he descends into the sense perception of all human beings. He comes within the sense perception of human beings. So even though he is present as super soul, he doesn't come within my sense perception, I cannot see him. But when he agrees to come within the sense perception of all human beings, that is what is called an avatar. But when he does that, he does not give up his nature. The Lord does not give up his nature, he doesn't give up his qualities, he doesn't compromise himself, he doesn't cut himself into two and come. He is completely there, along with all of his inconceivable potencies, he comes. And when he comes here, enlightened people worship him for various reasons. Now there are various reasons why people worship him. And these are standard in Vedic civilization. They worship him for dharma, which means the practice of Vedic culture, and artha, which leads to resources. I brought this out yesterday, which leads to kama, sense pleasure. Now there are various grades of sense pleasure. In Vedic civilization, We do not try to make this world into paradise. And therefore, in Vedic civilization, there is nothing called scientific research, development and all that. Because the Brahmanda or the universe itself is graded into higher realms corresponding to more and more sense pleasures. So certain areas are allocated for higher sense pleasure. You cannot go into a lower level and try to make it into a higher level. So, but it offers a system by which you can move from a lower zone to a higher zone. That is called dharma. Artha, kama. For instance, attaining the heavenly planet, that is kama. Being born in a rich family, that is kama. And the activities by performing which you get the resources for that and you get the sense experience, pleasurable sense experience, they are all included in that basic package. So dharma, artha, kama, this is called trivarga. Trivarga. Trivarga is mundane life. So for this also, you need to worship the Supreme Lord, otherwise you will not get these fruits. So in Vedic civilization, everybody has to worship Lord Narayan, Lord Vishnu, to attain sense enjoyment, to attain resources for sense enjoyment, and for the fructification of their dharma. Even though demigod worship is sanctioned in Vedic literature for less intelligent people, one has to worship the demigods along with worship of Lord Vishnu. You cannot worship demigods without worshipping Vishnu. That is fruitless, that's useless. If one wants to worship Lord Shiva, you can worship Lord Shiva, but you must also worship Lord Vishnu. So you cannot worship Lord Shiva or Lord Ganesh or whoever without worshipping Lord Vishnu. That is why Ramanuja says that he is worshipped for attaining these. He is also worshipped for attaining liberation. Liberation means freedom from threefold miseries. Freedom from the miseries of material existence. That is what is generally called moksha.
Prabhupada adds that the Lord also provides prema bhakti.
Prema. Prema means selfless devotional service to the Supreme Lord. When a living entity attains love of Godhead, then he doesn't even want moksha. He doesn't want dharma, he doesn't want artha, doesn't want kama, doesn't want moksha also. And of course he doesn't want sinful life. It is also there.
These four are called chaturvarga. This is called trivarga.
Dharma, artha, kama, moksha. So one who has attained love of Krishna, love of Narayana, love of Godhead, he does not have any desire for chaturvarga. He simply wants to serve the one. That is the highest teaching of Bhagavatam, pure love of Krishna. Okay, so he comes to this world on the pretext of killing the demons, etc. But actually speaking, he is coming for helping people take to devotional service of the Supreme Lord. So then Ramanuja continues, Paravara Nikla Jana Mano Nayana Hari Dibya Shrestitani Kurvan Putana, Shakata, Yamalarjana, Arishta, Pralamba, Dhenuka, Kaliya, Keshi, Kulaya, Pida, Chanura, Mushtika, Tosala, Kamsaji, Nihatya, Anavathika, Daya, Sauhar, Danuraga, Bhava, Valoka, Pasrade, Vishwam, Apyayayan, Niratashaya, Saundarya, Shaushilyadi, Gunaganadhikarena, Akrura, Malakaradin, Paramabhagatan, Kritwa, Pandu Tanaya Yuddha Protsahana Vyajena Paramapurushartha Lakshana Moksha Sadhana Taya Vedanto Ditam Swavishayam Jnana Karmanu Grihitam Bhakti Yogam Avatarayamasa. And so after appearing, what he does is he performs wonderful activities which attract the minds and eyes of all sorts of people, spiritualists and materialists. He kills various demons like Putana, Shakata, Yamala. Demonesses like Putana, Shakatasura, and he delivers Yamalarjuna, he kills Arishta, Pralamba, Dhenuka, he destroys the side of Kaliya, kills Keshi, Kuvalayapida, Chanura, Mushtika, Tosala, Kamsa, and with boundless compassion and kindness and affection, he fills the universe with his, with these qualities of his, because of his kindness, and he makes Akrura. And there was in Mathura, there was one person who made garland for the Supreme Lord, and he gave it to him. And the Lord was very pleased with him and blessed him to become a pure devotee. So he made with his wonderful qualities of sweetness and wonderful character, he made Akrura and a garland maker, etc. He made them supreme devotees, made them great Uttamadhikari Vaishnavas. And having done that, that was the real purpose why he came. Then having done that, on the pretext of inspiring the son of Pandu to engage in a war, he taught his own Bhakti Yoga, which is assisted by Jnana and Karma, which are favorable to Bhakti Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga, which is focused on the Supreme Lord and which is specified in the Upanishads. He taught him that through the Bhagavad Gita. So this is what Krishna does. This is the reason why Krishna comes. He actually comes in order to speak Bhagavad Gita, to make people devotees. The other activity which he does is more or less superficial. That is not so important for him. Because Prabhupada says that even material nature can deal with these people. And Prabhupada also concludes that because this Bhagavad Gita has come from the Supreme Lord's mouth, it is not different from the Supreme Lord himself. And therefore, everyone who wants to understand how to attain the auspiciousness, they should study this book, which is a gateway to the kingdom of spirituality. They should study this book. And then Prabhupada also quotes from Baladeva Vidya Bhushan and Vishnu and Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But this we will deal with later. Any questions so far? Before I take up some other points brought up by Bhaktivinoda.
This Prabhupada is quoting Ramanuja writes like this.
Yeah.
And then Baladeva
like this. Yeah. In the introduction. Only in the introduction. Otherwise, it's just a simple poetic rendering. Only the introduction is like this.
Is there more?
Just one more paragraph, but I'll come to that later.
When will you be giving us the brief overview of the entire course of 8 months that you started teaching? Will you be giving us a brief overview of the entire 8 month course? What will you be doing?
We'll be studying Bhagavad Gita in sequence.
And then Srimad Bhagavatam.
Srimad Bhagavatam also in sequence.
Right. And is there anything like assessment task?
Of course. Every month.
Right.
If you have read the prospect, you will see.
That's 4 pages. And we are going
to talk. I'll give a schedule. I'm supposed to give a schedule.
Okay.
I printed it, but it's sitting elsewhere, so I just have to.
He also said you have memorized 100 verses.
108 shlokas.
Are there any 108?
No, no.
You are going to
specify.
You are specified. So it will be there in that schedule.
It is a separate handout.
Separate handout. When will you be getting that?
Maybe I should print that as a separate one. Within a few days, I'll print it with us. It is an intense course, but it is worth it. It's a deep study of the Bhagavad Gita.
I was impressed by his prospects, and that's why I decided to come all the way.
Okay. Now, Bhaktivinoda has also written a comprehensive introduction, and I will deal with some of the points that he made. I won't have time to cover all the points because there's too many. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur. His introduction to his commentary called Rasika Ranjan. Bhaktivinoda himself wrote two commentaries on the Gita. One is called Vidvat Ranjan and one is called Rasika Ranjan. This was his first commentary, Rasika Ranjan. And he wrote an introduction to that also. I only deal with some points that he brings up here. If something is unclear with what I'm going to explain, you can ask me in the middle. You can ask me in the middle. Okay, now this is a different sort of introduction. You will understand how the different acharyas are analyzing the same Gita from various angles of vision. And there, he begins by saying, Nigam Shastra Atyanta Vipul, that the Vedic literature is very, very vast and extensive. Some portions of it promote dharma, religious life. Some promote karma, specific activities, specific described activities. Some literature, they promote Sankhya Jnana. They promote an analysis of this material world. Some of them promote devotion to the One Supreme God and so forth. You know, different portions of the Vedas, they are promoting different different ideas. Now this is well known amongst people who study Hinduism in the academic world also. And it is also known amongst Hindus and people who study India. Now there are some people who try to make sense of this. Some cannot make any sense of this. And they simply conclude that the Hindu scriptures or the Vedic scriptures are incoherently speaking so many things. Okay, somewhere it glorifies something as the greatest, and somewhere else it glorifies this as the greatest, somewhere it glorifies this as the greatest. So many things are going on. It is like a crowd of people, each one talking different things.
Yes, I have a comment on that. You know, it says Avan, Mano, Gochara. That's what Muslims also think, you know, that Allah cannot be described. And that was the reason why they broke so many temples. Like Vrindavan temple was 8-story temple and they broke to 3 stories and became 5 stories. Because Muslims thought that these Hindus, you know, they call them prophets. They are describing a God, and God cannot be described.
Yeah, God cannot be described by man's own endeavor, but God has the potency to describe himself to man. God has the potency to describe himself. So because the Vedic scriptures are so extensive and promoting apparently they're promoting different ideas, in order to there is a need to understand what is the relationship between the different things. Why are different elements of Vedic culture being promoted?
Somebody wants to talk to him. From Vedic. I have covered it here. One second, please.
So different statements are made, and some scriptures also talk about multiple levels of conditioned souls. So this is a very complex topic for people of Kali Yuga. Because people are not very intelligent in Kali Yuga, they live short, they are not able to understand the connection between these different topics. So there is a need, or there was a need, to present a concise and a scientific investigation of the relationship between different aspects of Vedic teachings. Such a situation arose at the end of Dwapara Yuga, when different followers of the Vedas lost the big picture and they couldn't understand what was going on. So some people, they started to say that the Vedas are actually talking about karma and everything else is simply to make you do karma. Some others said no, it is to present yoga and everything else is to help you do yoga. Some others said no, it's Sankhya, Jnana. Some others said no, it is Tarka. And some said it is Abheda Brahmavad, impersonal, undifferentiated monism, that there is one impersonal absolute and that's the real teaching of the Vedas. So all of them, they started presenting that this is the actual idea of the Vedas. So because of this this sort of fragmented understanding, they don't have a very clear consolidated picture of what is going on. These people, they because of their confusion, in India there was a lot of confusion on what is the message of the Vedas. So under that circumstance, the most compassionate Lord, who is who has taken a vow to present the truth, he on the pretext of inspiring his friend Arjuna to fight, he actually settled the whole issue and in order to clarify the meaning of the entire teaching of the Veda. This is an important point, because generally we think that Bhagavad Gita settles the meaning of the Upanishads alone. But it is not really settling the meaning of the Upanishads, it is settling the meaning of the Upanishads and the entire body of Veda, all levels of Veda. So he manifested this Bhagavad Gita, this book known as Bhagavad Gita. And this shines as the crest jewel of the Upanishads. He points out the different levels, the relationship between different Vedic teachings which are suitable for different levels, but ultimately he presents that only Bhakti Yoga to Lord Hari is the eternal duty of all living entities. There are some people, mundane speculators, very great scholars, they think that the Bhagavad Gita actually promotes or it supports impersonal monism. But this is not a fact. This is not a fact. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out that there are some scriptures which promote karma, Vedic routine duties. There are some other scriptures which promote jnana, impersonal understanding. But he explains that for people who are suited for karma and for people who are suited to jnana, those scriptures, in order to give them faith in those activities, they present that this is the highest. So there are actually places where these kinds of teachings are presented. For instance, if you read various Dharma Shastras, you read Mahabharata, you very clearly get the impression that this is the most important thing you can do. This is the most important thing you can do. Nothing else is more important than this. This is the real thing. And everybody else is doing some superficial thing because they are unqualified for it, or even if they are more qualified for it, they are so rare or they are hypocritical anyway. This is how they present it. The scriptures themselves speak like this. The scriptures themselves speak like this. So naturally the followers of the scriptures also develop that idea. Similarly, there are scriptures which promote a sort of impersonal understanding. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that this is not, these are not meant to be taken as presenting teachings which have permanent relevance in the living entity's lives. They don't have permanent relevance. At a certain point in our existence, it may be relevant. And in order to get faith in that, they speak like that. So, okay, at that time, you need to think like that. So, you accept that instruction. But that is not of permanent relevance. But he says that there are other scriptures which say that at the time of sadhana, one was engaged in the type of spiritual process where bhakti predominates over karma and jnana. This is called
karma jnana pradhan bhuta.
This means that you may engage in Vedic activities, and you may also consider that we are qualitatively one with the absolute truth. But that element of karma and that element of jnana, even though they are existing, they have to be superseded by bhakti. Even at the status of sadhana, there is sadhana and there is sadhya, the goal, siddhi. At the state of perfection, or what we are looking at, our lakshya, our goal, is to come to unalloyed prema bhakti. But at the time of sadhana, we may require karma. We may require jnana. We may require some karma. And we may require jnana also. We may require scriptural knowledge. If we do not take shelter of Vedic pious activities, then we may take shelter of non-Vedic impious activities, simple activities. Similarly, if we don't take shelter of Vedic knowledge, then we may take shelter of non-Vedic ignorance. Karma Mishra Bhakti is much better and is at least accepted as authentic in comparison to Vikarma Mishra Bhakti. Similarly, Jnana Mishra Bhakti is better and considered authentic in relation to Ajnana Mishra Bhakti. But our goal is Shuddha Bhakti. So, that sort of, some scriptures present like this. That at the time of your sadhana, right now, okay, you engage in pious activities, give up impious activities. You study Vedic scriptures. Don't study non-Vedic teachings. And you keep Bhakti Yoga as the primary feature in your life. And you keep as your goal pure love of Godhead. So that process, some scriptures they present like that. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, these scriptures are presenting Vedic teachings which are most beneficial for all living entities. And Bhagavad Gita does that. Bhagavad Gita preaches this sort of message. Bhaktivinoda says, Upanishad Samoha, Brahma Sutra, O Bhagavad Gita, Sarvato Bhave Shuddha Bhakti Shastra. In all respects, the Upanishads, the Brahma Sutra, Vedanta Sutra, and Bhagavad Gita, they are all Shuddha Bhakti Shastras. They are scriptures which teach Shuddha Bhakti. They don't teach Mishra Bhakti. They don't teach anything other than this. This is what they are aiming at. However, corresponding to whatever level, for the time being, they may be presenting a teaching which appears to be not Shuddha Bhakti. Like we will see in the Bhagavad Gita itself, in the third chapter, Krishna will say, Niyatam Kuru Karma Tvam. He says, simply perform your pious activities, simply perform your prescribed activities. Karma Jayo Hyas, Akarmana. Prescribed activities are much better than not performing prescribed activities. So he will present it and promote it, Krishna, at that point. But you should always keep in mind that is not Krishna's goal. Similarly, you know, here and there you may speak of Jnana. He'll speak on Ashtanga Yoga. But he is not going to present that as the highest teaching, as the greatest achievement. He's simply stressing the importance of that for people who have achieved a certain level of existence. That is all. There are two types of people who study the Bhagavad Gita. There are two types of people who study Bhagavad Gita. One group of people, they study Bhagavad Gita very superficially. And there's another group of people who study very deeply. Those who study the Bhagavad Gita superficially, they come to this conclusion that they study the Bhagavad Gita and they come to this conclusion that in reality what should be done is you should simply perform your prescribed duty. In India we used to have people like this. And they would quote from Bhagavad Gita that ultimately you should do your karma. This is what Bhagavad Gita is teaching. This is all you need to do. Karma, hey, dharma. If you go throughout North India, you'll get it. And all you need to do is this. Karmanyeva adhikaraste ma phaleshu kadachana. So that one slogan they know, they'll go on repeating that. So there are some people who actually come to this conclusion that Arjuna did not want to fight. Arjuna's duty is to fight. So after hearing whole Bhagavad Gita, what did Arjuna do? He fought. So whole Bhagavad Gita is to convince Arjuna to engage in his prescribed duty of fighting. This is what you are supposed to do. Bhagavad Gita teaches you to do your prescribed material duties. In other words, you should become a good boy of this world. So there are some people who actually think like this and they promote that. All that you need to do is to perform duties prescribed in the Vedas corresponding to your varna and ashrama. And this is the intention of Bhagavad Gita. But there are others who study the Bhagavad Gita a little deeply. They say, no. They're not satisfied with this kind of materialistic conclusion. And they say, no, this is a misunderstanding. Some of them are impersonalists and some of them are personalists amongst those who analyze the Gita a little further. The impersonalists say that the Bhagavad Gita is promoting Nirvishesha Brahma Jnana. That you should come to the plane of knowledge of or realization of the impersonal absolute. And the Vaishnavas, the personalists, they say that you have to come to the plane of transcendental bhakti yoga, parabhakti, which we also call prema bhakti, love of God, beyond the material world, as it is executed in the spiritual world. So, those who study the Gita deeply, they don't accept some mundane conclusion that simply performing material pious activities. They don't accept that. They say that you have to come to the spiritual plane. And Arjuna's acceptance of the duty of fighting is simply an example. It is simply like an example. It is simply a sample. Arjuna is a kshatriya. Arjuna is a kshatriya. So he has to do his vadharma in Varnashrama Dharma. Varnashrama Dharma is a social system given by Krishna, where society is divided into four varnas and four ashramas. Everybody has a varnic identity and an ashramic identity in Varnashrama system. In the modern world, there is no Varnashrama system, so nobody knows what is varna is. And there are people who even don't know what their ashram is. Confused. Ashrama confused. But in Vedic culture, you know, Vedic culture promotes one ashram, four varnas, four ashrams, and you belong to one. But there are also other duties which are common to all members of Varnashrama Dharma. For instance, you should be truthful, you should be pure hearted, you should not steal, you should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These are common duties. So specific duties are called swadharma. Swadharma means specific duties. Common duties are called sadharana dharma or samanya dharma. Swadharma or savishesha dharma. Swadharma. So now when it comes to swadharma, Arjuna swadharma was as a kshatriya. Arjuna had to fight. So having listened to Krishna, what did he do? He naturally accepted swadharma. So those who are deep students of the Gita, they don't say that everybody should fight. Rather they say that yes, you must do your swadharma. But your swadharma only is important in order to maintain your body and mind and your community. Swadharma is not spiritual. It's just mundane. It ensures that you have a material environment that sustains you. It is the best type of material life that is compatible with spiritual progress. It is not spiritual life. It is the best type of material life that is compatible with spiritual life. So the rules and regulations of Varnashrama Dharma are to be understood in that light. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that there is a distant relationship between spiritual progress, attaining the Supreme Absolute Truth, and Varnashrama Dharma, which is arranging for your external surrounding. There's no direct relationship really. But there is an indirect relationship. It's just like if you have to study for your exam. If you study for your exam nicely and you sit for your exam, then there's a good chance that you'll get good marks. But if your neighbors are blasting some cinema music outside near you, it is going to disturb you. Now of course there are ways by which, without disturbing your neighbors, you can still study. For instance, you can put earplugs. You can lock your house and make it soundproof, and then you can sit and study, and you can get high marks in your exam. That is possible. But if you are unable because suppose the grocery man comes outside, you go outside, immediately the noise is there, the music is blasting again. So you can't handle it. But if you make some endeavor to go to the neighbors and somehow or other convince them to turn down the music, then you will be able to study. But there is no direct cause-effect relationship. There is no direct compulsory cause-effect relationship. That is the point. There is a distant relationship. Because for your exam, suppose you get low marks, you cannot go to your examiner and say, "Sir, you should, it's not my fault, it is my neighbor's fault. You know, you should go talk to them, they are the ones who put loud music." They'll say, no, that's not our business, that's your problem. In fact, that's not even your problem. Even if they had all that, you should have managed. They only played from this time to this time. At that time, you should have gone somewhere else. And when the music stopped, you should have started your studies. They would say hundreds of things, they would say like that. So there is an indirect relationship between making a material environment favorable for spiritual progress and engaging in spiritual activities and progressing. These are two different things, two different parts. So yes, it's a fact that Bhagavad Gita denotes some time. It gives some time for this. It is not that Krishna does not speak about the importance of carrying out material activities in a certain manner. Definitely he gives time. In fact, one of the questions I used to have in the earlier days was, if Sarvadharman Parityajya is the main point of the Bhagavad Gita, Manmana Bhava Madhvakto Madhyaji Maam Namaskuru, think of me, remember me, offer obeisance to me, worship me. If this is the main teaching of Bhagavad Gita, why is Krishna talking to Arjuna hundreds of other things? Why can't he just say this? And this, the whole Gita could have been finished within 5 shlokas. Finished. Why did he have to speak 18 chapters? He could have just had one chapter and finished off the whole thing. And instead of spending 45 minutes of Arjuna talking so many 700 shlokas, you would have just spoken some 5-10 shlokas and finish it off. But it is very important, because most people cannot do Bhakti Yoga alone. They cannot do Bhakti Yoga alone. They cannot give up every other activity other than Bhakti Yoga. So you need to teach them how to engage in Bhakti Yoga and move up in Bhakti Yoga. Simultaneously, how to handle your other activities and coordinate them in such a way that they don't disturb your spiritual process. For instance, there are people who want to know. They always want to know why, how, what are the details. You cannot tell them get lost. Because for that also they'll start asking, why you should get lost. How can you get lost? Hundreds of questions they will ask. You cannot deal with them. So you cannot deal with them by just ignoring them. That's what I mean. You have to actually deal with their necessities. And therefore Krishna spends time introducing Dhyan. He explains the nature of the material world. He explains the nature of the living entity. He explains why we should take to spiritual life. He explains the different levels of spiritual life. Similarly, he talks about material life. Because we have material desires. We like eating, sleeping, mating, defending. We like sense gratification. In the middle of all that, we also have a desire to give up all these things and attain Krishna. So how to coordinate all these different pursuits? That is the spiritual urge to attain Krishna and come to the point where Krishna, I will fully surrender to you, I will just do whatever you want. So one part of us wants that. Another part of us is hankering for material enjoyment. And another part of us, our intelligence wants to know and understand. So there is the karma, there is the jnana, and there is the bhakti. Bhakti is the real thing. Bhakti itself, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains here, that bhakti itself has the nature of pure karma and pure jnana. When one comes to the point of love of God, he is directly seeing Krishna. So he no longer requires Vedic karma, Vedic material karma, in the mode of goodness. Similarly, he does not need to engage in Vedic material pious activities. So he is engaged in bhakti, which is the nature of an activity, karma, in love of God. And at the same time, it is the activity of perception, seeing. That's what Prabhupada called the love of Godhead as Krishna consciousness. Consciousness, jnana. So there are these three elements, karma, jnana and bhakti. Okay, I'll stop with this and tomorrow we'll continue with this. Bhakti one of the last. Any last points?
All the Vedic Shastras glorify Krishna actually.
Ultimately.
Yeah. But it seems that they do something else. They promote karma, jnana, different demigods. So
corresponding to the levels of the conditioned souls, corresponding to their desires, Krishna wants to attract all people interested in all things possible to him. But he cannot, he wants to do it by trapping them into whatever they want. And therefore, Vedic culture is vipula, it's extensive, vast, variegated.
So, this glorification of glory is also like indirect, it's not.
Yes, it is indirect.
Indirect. You have to explain it in such a way.
It is indirect. It is not direct. There are scriptures which directly present the thing, but there are scriptures which indirectly present the thing. And the scriptures which indirectly present the thing are very vast, and they are needed. They are very much needed. They are needed for conditioned souls who don't know about Krishna consciousness and who are bewildered by the material world. They are also needed for conditioned souls who know Krishna consciousness and are bewildered by material nature. It's needed for both. And some people are sleeping and some are pretending to sleep. So therefore, Vyasadeva and the Veda itself is attracting all these people. Some people want to make quick spiritual progress, some people want to make slow spiritual progress, some people want to make as slow spiritual progress as possible. Some people don't want to progress at all. Some people don't want even to know about spiritual reality. There are conditioned souls like that. They don't want to know about spiritual reality. They just want to be absorbed in what they're doing. There are souls who want to accept Vedic authority only for existing in this world, life after life after life. There are some souls who don't even want to accept Vedic authority. They're all like, Krishna has the biggest family possible. And he wants all of his children to somewhat come. So he's offering them all different things. But at the same time, there is a need for souls who are qualified to understand the absolute truth. Because they are suffering and they are looking for a solution, they are qualified in that sense. But at the same time, they are bewildered by everything else that's taught in the Vedas. So in order to bring them to the fast track, Krishna speaks the Bhagavad Gita. Okay, all these things are bona fide, but you don't do everything bona fide. Basically, that's what Krishna is teaching. These things are all bona fide, it's not for you. This is the real thing. So, Krishna has very kindly given an outline of the entire Vedic scriptures. Okay, tomorrow I'll continue with Bhakti Vinod's analysis and I'll get back to the introduction, read some. And I may bring in some material from some other Acharya also. By the time I complete this introduction, I should have completed all the Acharya's introduction. That's my point. And then once we begin then. And I'll have to cull material from that.
Prabhu, when you give us the schedule, will it also include the questions for assessment or you'll be giving that only at the end of the month?
Sorry?
You'll be giving us the schedule for the program.
Yeah.
And will it include the questions for assessment?
No.
So you'll be giving us the questions only at the end of the month or what?
Yeah. But they will come exclusively from Prabhupada's book. It will not come from everything that I'm speaking, so you don't need to worry. The content is very
important. That if I know the question in advance, I can know.
No. My policy, I don't give question banks. But the exams won't be difficult.